Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
For the best Ravens coverage.
What time is
it? It's time for News from the Nest with Vinny and Haney. 105.7 The Fan.
I'm going to be a Frasian. I want to stay here. I want to be here. I want to retire here. But, you know, we'll see what happens when the time comes.
Patrick Ricard cleaning out his locker, unfortunately, yesterday, along with the rest of the Ravens as their season came to an end. Sunday night, as we all know, we've talked about, we continue to do so. And if you want to join us, you can. At 410-583-1057. He's an all-pro, pro bowler, in free agency, the unrestricted free agent style. And yes, Vinny, fullbacks are gone. It's not the old days of the Vontae Leaches or the Earl Campbells or the Jim Browns, because technically, I guess, they were fullbacks back in those days. And there's only a few, I guess. Buffalo's got Gilliam. Got Juszczyk, former Raven in San Francisco, where he's made the Pro Bowl a bunch of times there. But in this Todd Monken offense, assuming Todd Monken's still going to be here, how important is Patrick Ricard, and how much is he worth? Last year, he made $3,750,000.
Yeah. And, Bob, he's 30 and a half. He'll be 31 next season. The thing with Ricard is he gives you something that's not normal. You know, over a 300-pound fullback, you know, that he can catch the ball when need be. Not going to be a great route runner. He played 42% of the snaps in the Buffalo game. So what is it worth? That's the thing. Like you said, he made 375. What is he looking for? You know, is he a $5 million guy, a $4 million guy? What is, you know, what's the, I don't know what Juszczyk makes.
But say he does leave, there's no in-house replacement.
No.
So you'd have to peruse to see, you know, who could be available and, you know, capable of continuing this trend of the Ravens being one of the best running teams in the National Football League.
Yeah, and is there a guy in the draft? You know, because those guys, kind of guys in the draft, Bob, are probably rounds 5 through 7, because not a lot of teams are going to draft those kind of guys. So they would know that. You know, their scouts would know that right now. But I would think that they would want Ricard back. It's going to come down to price. You know, he's going to be 31, Bob, so length of contract. What do you want? Ideally, you'd probably want like a 2-year deal if I'm the Ravens. Sign him to a 2-year deal.
Now, as we talk about the unrestricted free agent and free agents, and Ricard obviously going to be part of the equation, we heard him say he wants to stay here for the rest of his career. Whether or not that is reality remains to be seen, of course. But Ronnie Stanley, it's free agency for the first time, and he got trimmed last year.
Yep.
Salary-wise, bounced back nicely. Thank you very much. Wasn't a first-team All-Pro like he was back in 2019 when he got the big deal from the Ravens then, but his level of importance is what? And again, do they have an in-house replacement for him? Do you maybe look at a starting tackle at 27 in the draft?
Yeah. At 27, you're not going to get a starting left tackle. Rosengarten is athletic enough to do it. You know, and to be totally honest, Bob, he was right tackle for Washington, correct?
No, he's left tackle. He got lit up in that championship game, if I'm not mistaken.
It was Penix's lefty.
Penix is
right?
A lefty. So, that's what that's.
Yeah, so he was the blindside guy.
Yeah. Yeah, so he has played basically that side. It was the point that I was going to make. So is that an option? Here's the thing with you kind of when you're looking at Ronnie, he's going to be 31 also. Somebody will offer him something. You know what? He took a pay cut down to $7.5 million. I mean, Bob, for when did he sign his deal? 19? Was that when he signed his?
After the 19 season.
He got hurt.
He's like 3 days after he signed the contract. He broke his ankle against Pittsburgh.
Okay, so 2020, 2021, 22, and he came back in 23. He wasn't totally healthy and he sucked. So, I mean, hadn't played a lot of football until this year. So, body-wise, that's going to come down to what your doctors say about the ankle. And if the ankle's good, the rest of the body should be pretty good because he didn't play a lot. Thought he had a pretty good year this year, athletically and stuff. He's never going to be the knock-you-off, smash-mouth kind of guy. Would you like him back for a couple years?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting to hear. That'll be a question for Eric tomorrow. You know, like, what do your doctors think? And he practiced every day, played every game. And he can work out this offseason again. So I would anticipate that if he comes back, he's going to have a good season. And because of that, my old line got better as the season went along. I would like him. I'm not paying him $15 million a year. You know, if I can work out a good deal, I would like him to come back. Do they have an in-house guy? I would think Rosengarten probably gets the first shot.
Well, here's I never promised you a Rosengarten talking about possibly playing left tackle for the Ravens.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of that will come down on, you know, what decisions be made in the offseason that kind of aren't on my hands, you know.
Yeah.
God willing, I hope we keep Ronnie. Like I said, those aren't in my hands, but Ronnie played like an all-pro this year, in my opinion. I think he should have been a pro bowler. Played his ass off all year, and, you know, whether if that means me go to left tackle or wherever happens, you know, I'm willing to do whatever.
Yeah, and Ronnie was alternate, as, you know, Roger was saying. Roger needs to live in a weight room. He lives in a weight room. I think he'll be able to handle it, Bob, because he's got the feet for it. So, like we always say, comes down to choices. Comes down to choices. And they don't have a lot of guys they got to pay yet. So they may have the ability to sign Ronnie for a 2-year deal or 3-year deal type of thing. But can you trust him to be healthy, or do you want to start the clock with Rosengarten at the left tackle, and you go find, you know, and is Voorhees the left guard and McCary your sixth man, or he proved this year that he can play 19 games with, you know, with that was kind of the big question with him before was being able to play that whole time.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. By the way, Kyle Juszczyk with signing bonus, prorated money, et cetera, his cap hit was $3.6 million.
Well, he took a pay cut this year, too. He took a pay cut. So, yeah. So
33 years old, too.
Yeah, he's 2 years older. So, yeah, Ricard, I'm probably guessing a 2-year deal for whatever. Just depends on who else is looking for a fullback.
We'll come back. It's kind of our money. How about that? Buy or sell. Forget about those and what these guys make, these millions of dollars. Let's count our cash. Buy or sell. Talk about sports subjects of the day as well. Then Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com. Talk about the end of the college football season. Ohio State national champions. And we'll talk some college hoops at Big Ten Zany. But that SEC, boy, that thing is really crazy.
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not going to buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney, 1057
The Fan. Vinny and Haney, 1057 The Fan. It is Turn It Up Tuesday, cranking it up to 12. We got your music coming your way because you picked the song. Send your request, Plaza Sports text line at 410-583-1057. Tons going on, world of sports. Ray Nance, count our money. We're talking about Ricard and Juszczyk and Finkel and Einhorn. Screw them. Where's our Dow? By herself.
Oh, the Dow's up 415.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Donnie, the S&P's up 34. NASDAQ is up 51. DraftKings up $1.75. Under Armour's up 32 cents. So Trump must have got the Under Armour tennis shoes?
You get no gas prices.
Bet all his money on DraftKings.
Yeah.
Bet on the national championship.
He says, drill, drill, drill. Prices are going to come down.
As far as our sports topics, we'll start with the Dodgers. Everyone's up in arms with the Dodgers. We were just talking about
this. No pun intended.
Their spending spree has left some baseball fans fed up with the entire free agency process. Really, the disparity between large market teams, small market teams. But to be fair, outside of Roki Sasaki, other teams had a legit chance to sign most of these players. You know, Tanner Scott's, Teoscar Hernandez, even Blake Snell had a pretty big market. But the concept of deferred money seems to have shaken up the sport a little bit. Their deal with Ohtani last year seemed to get the ball rolling, pushing a lot of money down the road to help avoid a luxury tax in the meantime. Now, the current CBA states that there's no limit on deferred money, but I was reading from our friend Mike Exisa, and he wonders if what the Dodgers are doing, or more so with Ohtani, will play a role in the next CBA negotiations coming up very soon in 2026. Buy or sell, Bob, deferred money and the Dodgers spending in general will cause another work stoppage.
I'm going to sell it. And look, we can go back to the doom and gloom of free agency, back to its infancy back in the 70s. And the Yankees were always the team that spent more than anybody else. But we've seen teams like the Angels dip their toe. Toronto just signed Taters for $90-plus million. They've been trying to give their money away. Deferred money. Didn't the Orioles give Chris Davis a ton of deferred money? They'll be paying him forever. Bobby Bonilla gets $1 million paycheck every June or July, whatever it is, from the Mets. They're just the team that's willing to spend it. That tax threshold that they're crossing, they don't care about. The only thing that'll ever change this, the haves, air quotes, and have-nots, is a salary cap, which will never, ever happen.
Right. I mean, how would you even go? Let's just say, for the sake of argument, they wanted to put a salary cap in. I mean, how would that even work? You've got an Ohtani, a Juan Soto sitting here with contracts that are just unheard of. You'd have to structure your new salary cap rules based on your biggest earners in the league currently. I don't think it would actually be feasible. Wouldn't even be possible.
Yeah, moving forward, perhaps, but you know, they've been crying for a salary cap for years in baseball, like they do in every other major sport. But that's why the Baseball Players Union has always been considered as the strongest and the benchmark for the rest.
I just want a floor for baseball. That's all I'd want.
That's probably more realistic. Yeah. We'll move over to the NFL here, where Matt Stafford, once again, unsure about his NFL future after completing his 16th professional season. Wow. Hard to believe.
Yeah.
Already that much tenure under his belt. Say once again here, because it's almost become an annual tradition for him since they won the Super Bowl a few years back. From a health standpoint, I mean, he's checking those boxes. 16 games this year, 15 a season prior. Durability's not a concern, but his numbers have taken a bit of a dip. It was once an annual 4,000-plus yards, 25-plus touchdown type of guy. We're down in the 3,720 touchdown range at this point. His contract runs through two more seasons, but is set up in a way where LA can cut bait either this offseason or next with minimal burden. With that in mind, Vinny, buy or sell, the Rams will not wait for a Stafford decision. They'll make it for him by choosing to move on.
I'll sell that. I think that he's their best option. And to be totally honest, I mean, Kupp's missed a lot of time, and Kupp won't be back next year, and he's an older guy, and Puka missed a lot. So I think Stafford probably really had a pretty damn good season, and he is by far their best option. So I would think that he'll be back, but he's going to want more money. Mm-hmm. Because he's not making the 50-some million dollars a year, which he should be.
Isn't that one of those trades, Rams-Lions, where it worked out for both parties involved? Yeah. Rams did get the Super Bowl, though. Mm-hmm. Detroit still chasing.
Well, we'll go back to baseball here, where the Astros, we know they landed Kyle Tucker and his 1 year remaining on his contract earlier this offseason. Sorry, the Astros traded Kyle Tucker to the Cubs. Getting myself confused. Chicago has naturally tried to lock him up long term. Since pulling off that deal, nothing has come of it. In fact, they apparently bickered over his arbitration value for this season. The difference between their argument, just $2.5 million. They did settle somewhere in the middle, so they didn't have to go through the hearing process. But Tucker taken care of for this year. Beyond that, bit of a mystery right now. Are you buying or selling, Bob, that arbitration disagreement will impact Tucker's desire to stay with his new team?
I'll soft buy it. You always get your feelings hurt. Hey, look at Corbin Burns with Milwaukee a couple of years ago, now in Arizona, living in his home state, getting paid handsomely to play baseball there. But if the Cubs come strong financially and he earns that paycheck, this guy was an MVP-level performer in the first half of the season for the Astros before he got hurt. His feelings will be pacified as long as a bank account. Maybe. If he sucks, they'll be like, all right, see ya.
And one last topic here in the NFL. The Chiefs have a decision to make this week with wide receiver Mecole Hardman. It's been a few weeks since he was designated to return from IR, but the team has yet to activate him. You're looking at a season he's had, really nothing there. A career low 90 yards in 12 games. Remember last season, his reunion with Kansas City after starting the year with the Jets. Really no stats there in the regular season, but his big moment came in the Super Bowl, hauling in the game-winning touchdown pass. Buy or sell, Vinny, the Chiefs will not activate Hardman ahead of the conference championship game because, simply put, they don't need him.
I'll buy that 100%. I don't think he will be. They have everybody's healthy now for them. They don't need him.
And they're having trouble getting all of those pieces involved. Hollywood a little quiet here in his comeback from injury. Some of the other Hopkins, who they traded for, he's not a superstar anymore, but pretty reliable, I would think.
And then, what's his name? Played with Steelers, Patriots most recently.
Oh, Juju.
Juju.
Hardman's fast. We've heard that for 5 years, how fast he is.
Yeah.
He's fast.
Hey, he had the one touchdown that mattered.
Yeah, but Worthy's faster.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, talk college football and hoops. Gary Palm from CBSSports.com. Take your phone calls at 410-583-1057. NFL Lunch, feed us some football at 1 o'clock. We'll look at our picks for last night's game and what the standings look like heading into the championship games in the National Football League. And we'll talk Orioles with Rich Dubroff. Anthony Santander's in Toronto. Tanner Scott's in L.A., like everybody else, it seems. Is this a whammy-lance-worthy offseason for Orioles fans? Rich Dubroff's going to talk you down off that ledge, or maybe push you off of it at 1:30. College football season over, as you heard during the update. Ohio State, kings of the football world. Here to talk about that's Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato from CBSSports.com. He's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back to the show Gary Palm. Gary, first of all, thanks for joining us as always. And Ohio State, big favorites in said game. Notre Dame started fast, looked like they were going to get blown out of Atlanta. Then they came back, became a much more entertaining contest than a lot of people thought it would be. So on a drama scale, excitement scale, how would you rate the first ever finale of the 12-team college football playoff?
Well, the fourth quarter gave it some drama, I thought, the second half, I suppose, when Notre Dame, as they have been in this entire playoff, was resilient. They got down big and then they came out and started making a run. And Ohio State was what they had been the entire tournament as well, just about, which was dominant. So, Notre Dame gave us some hope, at least in terms of competitiveness, for the end of this game through most of the second half, but in the end it just wasn't enough. Ohio State was just too good.
Now, in regards to Ryan Day and after the loss to Michigan, a lot of people wanted him gone. He's in over his head, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But here we are a little more than a month later, and he's the coach of the national champions, doing a lot of popping off after the game. This is one of the greatest college football teams of all time. I don't know if we can get into that argument in the time that we have allotted. But Ryan Day, the redemption for him feels like what, I guess, on this Tuesday morning?
It's going to feel really good until the next time he loses to Michigan. Seriously. If he loses to Michigan next November, guess what? It's all going to start over again. I sometimes think for Ohio State fans, that game is more important than anything else. So the national championship, yeah, that's nice. We expect those kinds of things. But if you can't beat Michigan – you know, you've got a problem here. And that's, I think they hyper-focus on that really too much.
Hey, Jared, what changes do you think that the committee's going to make in the 12-team playoff going into next year?
If they make any at all, I think it would be to seed give the byes to the top four teams,
right,
instead of top four conference champions. You know, it's funny, though. I mean, the NFL has been doing that for a long time. You know, we saw this year some blowback for that because the Lions and the Vikings were one game apart. I think the two best records in the NFC, and one to one seed, one to five. And neither one of them got anywhere. But, you know, I'm not really sure. The other problem is that the teams that get byes are off for too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't play for a month. And, boy, I think the rust showed on all of those teams. You know, and it's not just a month, but it's December. So you might have your kids in school for a while, and then the winter break comes, and the team can still stick around. But, you know, Christmas comes, and you're going to send your kids home for Christmas probably. And, you know, it's just hard to maintain your focus for a month. And it's and I think that showed. And just about all – Texas was the only – I'm sorry, Arizona State was the only team that got a bye that was competitive enough to make the game interesting. And that's just – and I don't know that you can do anything about it. If you're going to, you know, put your quarterfinals in bowl games, you know, the bowl games are at the end of December and, you know, beginning of January. So that's, you know, that's what you're going to do. But you're talking about a lot of time off for teams that have really earned the right, you know, to have an advantage. But that's, I don't know that that's a solvable problem.
Hey, Jared, how about, you know, the bye teams getting a home game too? Because I tell you what, the home game stuff, that was extremely cool. Yeah. You know, yeah. all the college, the atmosphere, phenomenal.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the new format when they announced it as home games.
Yes.
You know, the problem with that, though, is that they want those six major bowls to be involved in this. Well, you can't really do that, you know, unless you were to flip it and make the bowls be the first round games and have the semifinals or the quarterfinals played on home fields. That would be something of an advantage, at least, for those teams that are sitting around for a month. But I don't know if that fixes entirely sitting around for a month. But as long as they want those six bowls involved, there really isn't, you know, any way to do that. One thing, though, I think I would recommend, I don't think they'll actually do, is if you want to reward the conference champions,
mm-hmm.
you know, you make the top four seeds, the top four teams, and then any conference champion that is not getting a bye gets a home game regardless of where they're seated.
Yeah, the thing I didn't like, Jerry, about the conference, like Penn State got the benefit of losing their conference championship game, where Oregon, they got hosed.
Yeah, that's basically right. You know, and the same was true of Texas. So, yeah, I mean, that's because you end up being off for so long. You know, I mean, you still have to go out and play an extra game and you still have to win it. But, you know, you're getting a home game, at least in the case of those two teams. So, you know, it's just Ohio State and Texas, I mean. But, yeah, it's hard to be completely fair when the teams that are getting byes are getting most of a month off. There really isn't much you can do about, you know, rewarding those teams. You know, you're kind of not rewarding them. You're almost punishing them for being a top seed.
Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. So congratulations to Ohio State. Jerry, if you don't mind, we'll transition to men's college basketball. And before we get to the Terps, because we had Kevin Willard on a couple of hours ago, they got Illinois coming up Thursday night. Michigan State, shaky start to the campaign, but they're undefeated right now in the Big Ten. Nice win, big win, against the Fighting Illini on Sunday. Why the turnaround here for Tom Izzo's team? They started on the fringes of the top 25. They're really starting to percolate here. Your Purdue Boilermakers are on the fringe of the top 10 yet again. But why Michigan State looking like one of these vintage Izzo teams, not that little train that could in late February into March?
He's got a lot of talent on that roster. I mean, that's why. They've got talent. They're well coached. You know, sometimes at the beginning of the year, it's you're still sorting out lineups and trying to figure out what rotation works best. I know for Purdue, they got past the Toledo game before they settled on a starting lineup and a rotation that's working for them. And it's worked very well because I don't think they've lost since, but they didn't lose to Toledo either. But it's, you know, that sometimes it just takes a little figuring out, especially if you have, it depends on how many people you lose from the year before. Like, you know, Purdue is replacing Zach Edey, you know, so now you're trying to figure out how to, you know, how to play without him. And sometimes you have to get into the game before you really know. But yeah, Michigan State is tremendous. They've got a lot of talent. They're well coached. They should be the favorite in the league right now. But of course, you know, Purdue, Illinois, Oregon are all really good. And then, you know, Michigan with 2 7-footers has got something of a unique situation. They're not really playing well enough yet to think of them as a title contender, but they may have something to say about it one way or the other.
Now, we had Kevin Willard on a couple hours ago, and we were talking about, you know, projections and net rankings and Ken Palm this, that, and the other, and Terps, no quad one wins. Right now, you got them first four out of the tournament as we sit today. What needs, I mean, obviously you got to start stacking some wins, but you go to Illinois, you go to Indiana, and to start to stack some quad ones talent-wise, and you saw them up close and personal against Purdue. Do they have the players to get off that bubble and get themselves firmly entrenched into the March Madness fun here, which we all want to see around these parts?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can. They're going to have to be able to prove that they can win away from home. You know, so they beat Villanova and Syracuse in games that are considered neutral court games, but they don't have a road win yet. They got 4 of their next 6 on the road. So, you know, they've got to – I don't know if they have to beat Illinois necessarily, but because that's a pretty good team. But, you know, Indiana, Ohio State, Nebraska have all shown that they can be beaten at home. And, you know, if Maryland really wants to make a case, well, they need quad one wins, you know. And so they've got a whole ton of those left on their schedule. So lots of chances for that. But they have to be able to prove that they can beat tournament quality opposition off their home floor. And that's the one thing that they really haven't done yet. They haven't hurt themselves. They don't have a ton. They don't have bad losses. You know, but they need higher quality wins, and they need to be able to show that they can do it off their home floor.
Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com. Jerry, always great to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday, and we'll check in with you soon here.
All right, thanks.
There's Jerry Palm, everybody. It's Vinny at Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, reset the program. You want to join us, you can at 410-583-1057. Hey, you still want to vent about the Ravens? We got all off season to do so. John Harbaugh, Eric DaCosta, me with the media tomorrow. We got NFL lunch coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll look at the championship games in the National Football League, and then we'll talk some Orioles. Rich Dubroff, BaltimoreBaseball.com. We're less than a month away from pitchers and catchers. But it's a tough business. The pro sports world, in particular a league like the NFL, has a salary cap where you have 53 men, you have a practice squad, you have undrafted free agents that you have to take care of, and bringing everyone back is an impossible task. And we talked about a couple of players a couple segments ago. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. ELO, by the way, Turn It Up Tuesday. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato. Nolan McGraw, NFL lunch, top of the hour. Look at the championship games and our picks from last night. Talk Orioles, Rich Dubroff, bottom of the hour. Tony Taters is gone. Are we shedding tears in the warehouse over there? Any other moves come in Mike Elias's way before spring training, pitchers and catchers, then less than a month. All right, Ronnie Stanley, team-friendly deal. We're going there?
Yes.
Patrick McCary.
I would
starter this year, but will that be his role moving forward?
Yeah, and he made $5.1 million. I mean, he started 17 games this year on the number one offense, and he's only 27 years old. So would love to have him back, Bob. Would love to have him back just because of his versatility. I think that when he goes out on the market, he's going to kind of be a valuable guy because he can play center guard and both tackles. So I think people are going to want them on their roster just because so many – look at the Chiefs, you know, with the left tackle revolving door. They had to put the guard out there. So I think McCary got a chance to make some money.
Now, you like Voorhees, Andrew Voorhees.
I do.
Who missed all of last year with an injury out of USC. But plugged in play. He was anointed the starter pretty much from the beginning of the whole process, but didn't really last that long for him. Then he got banged up, too.
He got hurt.
Wasn't playing all that great when he was.
Yeah, McCarry came in, played good, and then he played that last game of the, when he had to play when McCarry was down. I thought he played well in that game. Just needs a lot of reps. Not a, a lot of game reps is what he needs. I think that he'll be good enough if he has to be in that spot. And then maybe McCarry has to play right tackle, Bob, if Rosengarten plays left tackle. So, I mean, that's the option they have is McCarry could move out to play the right tackle spot and Voorhees at the left guard if Ronnie left.
So Daniel Fa'alele is your right guard and there's no more nonsense with moving him around.
Nope. He is there for a while.
All right. Malik Harrison. A guy that, you know, historically you haven't been a huge fan of, Vinny, but found his niche here in 2024 because, you know, Trenton Simpson did not rise to the occasion. So Harrison got in there along with Chris Board, and we saw that position get stabilized next to Roquan Smith. Malik Harrison hits free agency, and what are we doing with him?
Well, this past year he made 2.7, and he's 27, going to be 27. Play inside linebacker versus the run, play outside backer versus the run. Doesn't give you anything in the pass rush, and he's a liability in pass coverage as a inside line. I mean, you'd like to find better. And you hope that Simpson, because Simpson's got all the athleticism, but he doesn't have the physicality and the toughness right now that like a Harrison has. And Simpson kind of went the other way. You know, he started out pretty decent, but then he got worse as the season went along. So with Harrison, with Board, with all those guys, hope to find better. But if I can't, you know, and Harrison's good on teams, you know, can I bring him back? Sure. If I get the right price, if somebody wants to pay him as a starter, Bob, he's gone. If somebody wants to pay him as a backup, Ravens probably be competitive there.
Nolan McGraw, of the unrestricted free agents that we've talked about, where's your priorities here? How would you handle this business if you're Eric DaCosta, keeping in mind that there's a salary cap and you can always restructure deals and all the fun stuff goes along with that. But of the unrestricted free agents of impact, who can they ill afford to let walk?
Well, I'd probably just default to Ronnie Stanley, but it's not as much about his individual skill set as it is about how difficult it is to find a quality left tackle in this league. You know, if it's not going to be Stanley because they can't afford him or for whatever reason, well, you got to replace him. And we toyed around with the idea here of maybe moving Rosengarten over there, trying an in-house option. I think even if you do that, you're going to have to search in free agency or through the draft to find some more depth there. So I would make that the top priority, but by no means am I putting the full court press on Stanley saying, hey, we got to get this guy back. I'm operating within my parameters, 2 years, maybe three tops. I mean, if he's still dead set on that one last big payday as a 30-year-old guy, and there's a team out there, a bottom feeder that has the space that's willing to do it, then you might just have to say, all right, it is what it is. We'll have to move on. But I think for a short term, yeah, bring him back.
All right, if I'm Ronnie's agent, all right, let's look at it from Ronnie's side. You cut me down to $7.5 million, which was, at that time was the right thing. I hadn't played. I was embarrassed watching myself play the year before. Nobody would have wanted me. And I was alternate to the Pro Bowl, and I was making $7.5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so can you pay me 10, 11? I'm not sure what Ronnie would ask for. It probably all depends on who else is interested. I mean, that's the thing. Do I have two teams? Who has the leverage? That's what it's going to come down to. And if Ronnie has no leverage, probably sign back at 7.5. If Ronnie has leverage, he's going to the highest bidder probably.
But leverage assumption, I would think, isn't a 10 in favor of him. I mean, he's reestablished himself as a guy that can play, but
I think it goes back to Nolan, Bob, what Norm was saying earlier. Supply and demand.
Yeah.
You know, there is
overpay. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what would the Chiefs pay for Ronnie Stanley right now?
Right, and looking, you know, you mentioned some hypothetical numbers there. He played at $7.5 million this past year. Of all the left tackles, that ranked right around middle of the pack, 17th largest contract for this past season. At 16 is Armstead in Miami. He's at $12.8 million. So a pretty big gap there between 17 and 16. And, of course, he's not even sniffing the top-tier money.
Right. I'm guessing that if I'm his agent, I'm probably looking at minimum of 12.
But that I think that that would, if I was the Ravens, you'd be comfortable there. He's middle of the pack. He's not a top 10, you know, left tackle contract. You could probably still afford that. And I think it's probably less about the money, you know, $8 million a year, $10 million a year, more about the length of the contract. That should be the Ravens' bigger concern.
Yeah, he's going to be 31 when they kick off the 2025 season. So that's why Eric DaCosta gets paid to make these big decisions. But Ronnie used to be a high-rent district guy salary-wise.
The highest.
Yeah, now he's living comfortably.
Yeah.
But maybe not overlooking stuff. It's 88-80-105-7 The Fan. More of that talk coming your way next with NFL Lunch. If you want to join us, you can. Board at 583-1057. We'll look at the championship games, which will kick off this Sunday. Ravens aren't part of it, as we've discussed. Then we'll talk Orioles with Rich Dubroff. Less than a month for pitchers and catchers. How much left on the agenda for Mike Elias? Hey, they've been kicking tires on players. Got a couple in-house. But what's next to accomplish before they get ready for the 2025 season?